In the next 12 months, four tech companies are going to spend something like $725 billion on computer servers.
Yeah, which is just a staggering number to even say out loud.
Right. I mean, that is enough capital to buy the entire gross domestic product of Switzerland in cash.
Literally.
And because of that massive localized vortex of spending, you currently cannot buy a high-end graphics card.
Not a chance.
Your new smartphone just got significantly more expensive, and your kid might actually have to scan their physical face just to play a video game.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a series of completely isolated glitches in the Matrix, right? But it is actually one single massive supply chain shockwave playing out in real time across the globe.
Welcome to the deep dive. I am talking directly to you, the learner, because, well, I know why you're here.
You want to cut through the noise.
Exactly. You want to avoid the daily information overload and find those underlying aha moments that make the entire tech landscape just, you know, click into place.
And we have a lot to cover today.
We do. Today, we are tearing into this really fascinating tech dispatch from Taken Morning, and this is dated May 2026. We've got a stack of six major strategic updates right in front of us.
But our mission today is not to just, like, read you the news.
No, our mission is to uncover the invisible narrative thread that connects a trillion-dollar corporate data center to the actual screen sitting in your pocket.
Because the tectonic plates of the global economy are shifting radically right now. I mean, we are looking at a market where classic video game franchises are somehow intimately linked to the most advanced AI coding models on the planet.
It's wild.
To understand 2026, you really have to look at the underlying resource war.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start at the very top of the food chain. We are basically looking at a $725 billion AI black hole.
That's a good way to put it.
Because in just the first quarter of 2026, you have Alphabet, Meta, Microsoft, and Amazon. And they spent over $130 billion on AI infrastructure.
Just in Q1.
Just in Q1. And the full year projections are where we hit that staggering $725 billion capital expenditure mark. Like, Microsoft alone is forecasting $190 billion.
And Amazon is right there at $200 billion.
Right. And spending $725 billion on infrastructure in a single year, I mean, that is like buying the entire GDP of a small country just to build digital highways.
Exactly.
But instead of pouring asphalt, they are buying up all the world's electricity, they're securing massive water rights for advanced cooling systems, and they are hoarding basically every NVIDIA chip rolling off the assembly line.
If we connect this to the bigger picture.
Please do, because it's a lot.
You have to realize that big tech has fundamentally changed its internal classification of artificial intelligence. Like, for the last few years, AI was just an R&D line item.
Right, a neat little side project.
Exactly. It was a highly experimental feature to bolt onto existing platforms. But that era is totally over. They now view generative AI as the foundational utility grid for the next decade of human commerce. It is as fundamental to them as laying fiber optic cables was in the late 90s. And, you know, the sheer velocity of their cloud revenue is giving them the ammunition to actually do this.
Because the cloud numbers are just insane.
Yeah, Amazon's AWS cloud revenue just grew 28% to nearly $38 billion. Google Cloud surged 63% to $20 billion.
And their enterprise AI sales jumped eightfold, right?
Right.
But pouring $750 billion into, you know, concrete, copper wiring, and server racks? I mean, how does the math actually work out on that?
Well, that is the existential question haunting Wall Street analysts right now. It all comes down to the long-term return on investment.
Which has to be massive to justify this.
Building a data center today is incredibly hostile to profit margins. Because the core inputs, you know, industrial power and silicon wafers.
So super expensive now.
They're experiencing severe price inflation. So the tech giants are essentially placing this multi-hundred-billion-dollar bet that the software they run inside these fortresses will eventually generate enough productivity value to offset the astronomical upfront construction and energy costs.
Which brings up the absolute necessity for killer software. I mean, if you were buying a $725 billion hammer, you need a trillion-dollar nail.
That's perfectly said.
And this dispatch highlights that Anthropic, the company behind the Claude AI model, is currently in talks for a funding round that would value them at $900 billion.
Almost $1 trillion.
Which edges them past OpenAI's $850 billion valuation. And, you know, Claude 3.5 Sonnet is currently outperforming OpenAI's GPT 5.5 Pro in major coding benchmarks.
Yeah, they have massive backing from Google and Salesforce, too.
Right, and there is heavy speculation about an IPO in the second half of this year. But here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
I look at a $900 billion valuation for an AI software company, and my instinct is to just scream, hype bubble. I mean, can a company building enterprise coding tools truly generate the real-world economic output to justify being worth more than, you know, multinational legacy corporations that build jet engines or cargo ships?
Right. The skepticism is completely warranted there. But we have to look at what Anthropic is actually selling to enterprise clients. They aren't just selling a subscription to a smarter search engine anymore.
What are they selling then?
Well, when a model like Claude 3.5 Sonnet starts dominating coding benchmarks, it crosses a critical threshold. Anthropic is no longer selling software as a service. They are transitioning into selling labor as a service.
Meaning they are replacing the developers themselves.
Or at least radically altering the developer bottleneck. If an enterprise can license an AI model that autonomously writes, tests, and deploys production-level code, that company essentially transforms into an infinite software-generating factory.
Oh, wow. So you don't need a huge team of engineers anymore.
Right. The constraint is no longer how many human engineers they can hire, but simply how much compute power they can rent from Amazon or Google.
And that explains why Google and Salesforce are backing Anthropic so aggressively.
Exactly. The $900 billion valuation reflects the belief that whoever controls the most capable enterprise coding AI will essentially collect a tax on all future software development globally.
A global tax on software?
Yeah.
That's a wild concept.
It is. However, that high valuation creates a terrifying pressure cooker for them.
Because they have to deliver on it.
Right. If Anthropic fails to rapidly lock in those massive enterprise contracts, or, you know, if government regulators step into automated code deployment, that valuation will just collapse under its own weight.
So you have these four mega corporations buying up all the global infrastructure to run these trillion-dollar AI models. The downstream effect of that bottleneck has to hit the physical supply chain, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because what happens when the world's biggest companies vacuum up all the raw materials,
yep,
we see collateral damage in the consumer market.
Which brings us to the gamers.
Exactly. Yeah. Specifically, the $5,000 graphics card crisis.
Yeah, this is rough.
The NVIDIA GeForce RTX 5090 was supposed to be the absolute pinnacle of PC gaming. The baseline retail price was announced at $2,000, which honestly is already a massive barrier to entry.
It's basically a luxury good at that point.
Right. But our dispatch notes is currently selling for between $4,000 and $5,000, with some retail sites like Newegg listing it for an astonishing $7,500.
It's just price gouging.
We have people camping outside Micro Center locations for 3 days straight just to leave empty-handed. And to understand how severely this supply vacuum has warped global pricing, just look at the secondary gray markets.
The international numbers are crazy.
Yeah. In the Iranian market right now, due to a combination of import friction and the severe global shortage, these cards are selling for 300 to 400 million tomans. We're talking about a piece of computer hardware that literally costs as much as a vehicle.
It is a profound failure of consumer access. And to understand it, we really have to look at the specific mechanics of silicon fabrication.
Because it's not just that it's popular.
Exactly. This is not a situation where a product is simply trendy and flying off the shelves. The root cause is a brutal structural DRAM shortage.
A memory chip.
Exactly. Dynamic random access memory. Building out a massive AI data center requires terabytes upon terabytes of specialized high bandwidth memory.
And the big tech companies bought it all.
Microsoft, Meta, and Amazon saw this bottleneck coming years ago, and they executed massive long-term pre-purchase agreements with the foundries.
Wow.
So they basically locked down the global supply of raw memory.
Yeah.
Because of those corporate contracts, memory manufacturers like Samsung and SK Hynix simply do not have the physical factory capacity left over to allocate to consumer products.
So NVIDIA physically cannot source enough GDDR7 memory modules to assemble the RTX 5090 cards.
That's exactly the problem.
It's like trying to buy flour to bake a birthday cake for your kid. But four giant industrial bakeries showed up yesterday and bought the next 3 years' supply of all the world's wheat.
That's a perfect analogy.
And the gamers are the ones left starving in the aisle.
What's fascinating here is the brutal irony of the tech industry in this situation, because the PC gaming community is the foundational bedrock of NVIDIA.
They built that company.
Right. Gamers bought the early cards, they funded the research and development for decades, and they pushed the envelope of parallel processing that ultimately made modern AI possible.
And now they're getting totally shut out.
Because a single enterprise data center contract is worth billions. So the very demographic that built the empire has been shoved completely to the back of the line.
That is so rough.
And the supply chain physics dictate that spinning up new memory foundries takes years. The Dispatch basically advises consumers to just settle for last generation cards, like a 4080 or a 4090, because we will not see normalized supply chains until late 2026 or potentially 2027.
So what does this all mean for the entertainment market? I mean, if PC gamers are entirely priced out of high-end graphics cards because of this DRAM shortage, the market is suddenly ripe for an alternative.
A huge alternative.
A system that doesn't try to compete on raw, unaffordable hardware power. And we are seeing a massive pivot from Nintendo.
Nintendo's playing this so smart.
They really are. They are releasing a full, ground-up remake of The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, for the Switch 2 this summer, time for the franchise's 40th anniversary.
Which is huge news.
The original 1998 N64 game is practically a holy text in gaming. It holds a 99 out of 100 on Metacritic, and they're adding 4K graphics, live orchestral music, Master Quest mode, and Joy-Con support.
Yeah, people are going to lose their minds for this.
But here's the kicker. The Switch 2 hardware itself is reportedly operating with the processing power of a PlayStation 4 Pro. So, older, highly stable, easily manufactured legacy chips.
Just some cheap stuff.
Exactly. In that same constrained Iranian market we mentioned earlier, the console is floating around a very accessible 25 to 35 million tones. So my question is Nintendo just strategically brilliant for totally skipping this brutal AI hardware arms race and instead just weaponizing pure 4K nostalgia to sell consoles?
Oh, without a doubt. It is a masterclass in market positioning.
Really?
Yeah. In business strategy, there is this concept of avoiding the red ocean.
What's a red ocean?
It's a market space where competitors brutally fight over the same shrinking resources, which in this case is high-end memory and silicon. Nintendo has deliberately sailed into a blue ocean.
Okay. That makes sense.
They know it is financial suicide to compete against Amazon and Microsoft for GDDR7 memory allocations. So they completely bypass that supply chain.
They use older, cheaper components that the AI giants don't even want.
And they elevate the value of those cheaper components through unassailable intellectual property. It is a pure system seller strategy.
Right, because everyone wants to play Zelda.
Exactly. You look at previous generation titles like Breath of the Wild, it sold over 30 million copies. By targeting the exact demographic that just got priced out of the $5,000 PC hardware market, Nintendo proves that you don't need teraflops of rendering power to dominate entertainment.
You just need a great game.
You just need an emotional experience that consumers desperately want to access.
But, you know, not every piece of technology can just pivot to nostalgia.
Right, we still have to do our taxes and check our email.
Exactly. We still need modern hardware for our daily lives. So if AI is dominating the cloud and squeezing the components market, how is it actually functioning in the everyday devices we are forced to buy?
Which brings us to the new phones.
Right. Let's look at the Samsung Galaxy S26, which became widely available this May. The S26 Ultra is 0.3 millimeters thinner. It weighs 214 grams, has a new Snapdragon processor, and a 200 megapixel camera.
But it's not cheap.
No. The base price jumped by $100. You're paying $1,299 for the standard model and $1,599 for the Ultra.
Ouch.
Yeah. And in the global tech market, translating that through the lens of local inflation, we're seeing it hit 60 to 80 million tomans in the Iranian market.
That's a significant investment.
And the entire marketing campaign justifying this price hike centers on the phrase Galaxy AI. And I have to push back hard here.
Okay, let's hear it.
They're selling this narrative of a magical, intuitive AI that learns your daily habits. Yet the tech reviewers are heavily divided.
The reviews have been pretty mixed.
Right. CNET clearly states the software tricks are neat, but they don't justify a $100 premium. And The Guardian highlights that heavy gamers are experiencing serious battery drain.
Yeah, the battery life has taken a hit.
So are we actually witnessing a technological leap? Or are consumers just being forced to pay a massive premium simply for the letters A and I printed on the retail box?
Well, it is very easy to look at smartphone marketing and dismiss it as buzzword fatigue.
Because there's so much of it right now.
Exactly. But if we tear down the architecture of the S26, there is a fundamental shift in how computing is being handled. The real innovation of the S26 isn't the flashy predictive text or the photo editing.
What is it then?
The innovation is that the AI processing is happening entirely on device.
Oh, edge computing.
Yes.
So it's not pinging a server in California to figure out what app you want to open next.
Exactly. To do that, Samsung had to integrate incredibly robust neural processing units directly into the phone's silicon.
And that's what's killing the battery.
Right. That is where the battery drain issues originate. You are asking a device in your pocket to perform complex machine learning tasks locally.
That makes sense.
But the consumer trade-off for that battery drain is absolute data sovereignty.
So your data stays with you?
Yes. Your behavioral patterns, your daily routines, your voice queries, they're not being packaged and uploaded to the $725 billion cloud infrastructure we discussed earlier.
Wow. Which actually ties perfectly into their other major physical feature, the privacy display.
Yes, that's a huge addition.
Which is essentially an electronic polarizing filter you can activate so the screen goes black for anyone standing next to you. It's only visible straight on.
When you combine a localized NPU that keeps your data off the internet with a physical hardware screen that blocks visual snooping, the value proposition changes.
It's totally different.
For a user holding onto a three-year-old phone, the S26 isn't just a smarter device. It is a heavily armored one. It represents a paradigm where the tech industry realizes that privacy is now a premium luxury feature people will pay $100 extra for.
The idea of a phone acting as a privacy fortress is comforting for adults.
Mm.
But if hardware manufacturers are building walls to keep data localized, software platforms are constantly looking for new ways to verify exactly who is behind that wall.
Especially when it comes to kids.
Especially when the users are children. Which brings us to the ultimate intersection of technology, regulation, and privacy Roblox.
Yeah, this is a very controversial move.
As of late April and May 2026, Roblox is mandating that kids under 16 in Indonesia must complete a live facial scan just to access the chat feature. And this is to comply with new local social media laws.
But it's not just Indonesia.
No, they're rolling out mandatory age verification globally. You either upload a government ID or you subject your child to a third-party AI system known as facial age estimation.
And that determines what they can do on the platform.
Right. They use this biometric data to create tiered access. So kids 5 to 8 are totally locked out of chat, 9 to 15 get limited chat, and 16 plus gets the full experience.
And Roblox claims the data is deleted immediately, right?
They do claim that. But it feels like we're replacing a human digital bouncer with a biometric checkpoint. Are we really forced to trade our children's permanent, unchangeable facial data to an algorithm just to keep them safe from online predators?
This raises an important question.
Because it feels like a massive overreach.
It raises an important question about the illusion of technological security. Roblox has been battered by parental lawsuits regarding child safety on their platform, so deploying facial age estimation is a highly visible way to demonstrate compliance and, you know, regain trust.
It's PR.
A lot of it is. The AI works by analyzing the complex pixel geometry of a face to estimate age, and the company claims the data is instantly purged.
But from a cybersecurity perspective,
generating and processing biometric markers of minors creates an irresistible target.
Hackers don't attack the strongest point of a wall. They find the weakest third-party vendor handling that data.
Exactly. And even if the data is perfectly secured, you are trying to solve a deeply behavioral human problem with a line of code. Predators and malicious actors are highly adaptable.
So if Roblox blocks them, they just go somewhere else.
If Roblox enforces strict biometric gates, the predators simply migrate the conversation to parallel platforms with looser regulations.
Like Discord servers or private Minecraft instances.
Right. The technology offers a false sense of finality. The source material for this dispatch makes a very grounded, almost analog recommendation.
What's the advice?
AI age gates are easily circumvented by a kid holding up a photo or borrowing an older sibling's device. The only actual security is parental vigilance.
Meaning active parenting.
Exactly. Actively monitoring the digital environment, using localized VPNs to mask IP addresses and protect privacy, and having direct conversations about online threat models. You simply cannot outsource parental responsibility to a biometric scanner.
Wow. We really have traced the invisible mechanics of the entire tech ecosystem today.
We covered a lot of ground.
We started with the sheer gravity of a $725 billion infrastructure build-out. We saw how the promise of infinite automated labor drove Anthropic's software valuation toward $1 trillion.
Then we looked at the fallout.
Right. We followed the physical supply chain to see how those corporate data center contracts hoarded the world's memory chips, completely pricing gamers out of the $5,000 GPU market.
And how Nintendo capitalized on that.
Yeah, watching Nintendo brilliantly sidestep that silicon bottleneck by leveraging nostalgia and legacy hardware. Then we unboxed the new Samsung phone, see how AI is physically migrating off the cloud and draining our batteries just to protect our data locally.
And finally, the privacy toll on our kids.
Looking at how AI is being deployed as a flawed biometric gatekeeper for them online.
It really is a closed-loop system. When $1 trillion moves at the top of the supply chain, the pressure eventually alters the hardware in your living room and the privacy expectations of your family.
And you, the learner, you came here today to bypass the endless headlines and actually understand the machine. Well, now you have the ultimate cheat sheet. You can see the actual causality driving the 2026 tech landscape.
And as you look at that chain of cause and effect, I want to leave you with one final broader implication to consider.
Let's hear it.
We spent this entire deep dive analyzing how big tech is monopolizing the physical inputs, you know, the silicon, the memory contracts, the data centers, all to construct this new automated economy.
Right.
Which makes me wonder, as AI models become commoditized and ubiquitous, will the ultimate societal divide of our near future be less about who writes the smartest software and simply become a brutal geopolitical battle over who controls the raw electrical power grid required to even turn these machines on?
Man, that fundamentally reorients how we should be looking at the next decade. Follow the power lines, not just the code. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking questions, keep pulling on those invisible threads, and stay insanely curious. We will talk soon.